Hi everyone, welcome to episode 11 of Sisters, Coffee, and Crime. I'm Sandra.
And I'm Christina. Today we're talking about the senseless murder of Bridget Grenier. She attended a music festival with some friends. What should have been a fun-filled night in Rose Isle, Manitoba, turned into every parent's nightmare. Join us while we discuss what happened on June 23rd, 1990.
So this case happened in 1990, and I couldn't find a lot of information about the victim, and I really do try to find as much as I can. But this case kind of takes a turn, and all the information ends up being mostly about the persons of interest. But let's begin talking about Bridget. So Bridget was a 16-year-old high school student. And she was almost finished with the 11th grade. She had short, dark hair and bright, beautiful eyes. And really the only other thing that I could find about her was that her father's name was Ron. On June 22nd, 1990, Bridget would go to a music festival in Rose Isle, Manitoba, and it was held near a ski resort. She would be seen at the festival between 12 and 1:30 a.m. She was dancing and kissing a teenager, 17-year-old Timothy Houlihan. This was really one of the last times that she would be seen alive. The following days, Bridget's body would be found. Her body was laying in a creek in a heavily wooded area of the concert grounds. The conditions of her body are a little bit sensitive, so bear with us. She had been badly beaten. Her body was left, and it was obvious that she had been tortured. She was bitten. She had been struck in the head several times. She was strangled, and long, sharp sticks were forced into her vagina and anus.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yeah. So there are two suspects in this case, 19-year-old Kyle Unger and 17-year-old Timothy Houlihan, and that's the guy that she was seen kissing.
Mm-hmm.
These three teens attended the same high school, but didn't necessarily have the same group of friends, and they didn't go to the concert together. So Bridget and Tim would last be seen around 1:30, and they were seen leaving the dance area, and they went to a more secluded area of the resort. Now, Kyle, at the same time, ends up going to the bathroom, and he sees them.
Mm-hmm.
When he gets back, he tells his friend, John Beckett, that he saw Bridget. Here's the quote. She was going at it with some guy. And he doesn't say that it was Tim, which is kind of strange that he ID'd one but not the other.
Yeah.
Later on, Kyle and John will separate for a bit, and this happens around 2 or 2:30. And the last thing Kyle tells John is that he wants to hook up with some girl, stating he's going to go look for some tail.
God.
How we talked in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
It's gross. Anyways, John will say that Kyle was only gone for around 20 minutes, but other people in the group say that they didn't see him again till 3:30 or even 4 a.m.
Oh, wow.
That's quite a discrepancy.
Yeah, that really is a large amount of time.
But everyone agrees that when Kyle comes back, he acts normal. His appearance is the same. He wasn't, like, nothing was disheveled
right. Or
anything.
Right. It literally just looked like
he left off. And came back.
Okay.
Kyle leaves the festival between 4:30 and 5, the exact same way he got there, in a car.
Okay.
Now, Tim's story is a little bit more suspicious, in my opinion anyways. It's not looking great for Tim.
Okay.
So we know that he was last seen at 1:30 with Bridget, but then he's not seen again until 4 or 4:30. And when he catches up with his friends, his appearance is a little disturbing. His face and clothes are covered in mud. He has scratches on his face, and there's blood on his chin.
Yeah, that's not good.
No. A witness says that it looks like Timothy got a good beating, and Tim says that he actually did get attacked by an unknown person.
Okay.
And he was knocked unconscious, and that's why he was gone for so long.
Okay.
He continues to party with his friends, and before leaving the festival, he does what I think is the sketchiest thing. With one of his friends, helps him to burn something in a barrel that was found at the entrance of the music festival.
So his friend helped him burn something.
I don't know what that something is, but right. He burned something.
And they've never been able to figure it out?
I don't know if they ever knew what he burned, but...
Okay. And the friend didn't know what he burned? He just said that he helped him out.
He helped him burn something.
Okay.
Right. So, forensic evidence. Really, it was 1990. There isn't a lot.
Okay, fair.
But the police do have some. Against Kyle, it's pretty weak for me anyways. Mm-hmm. There was a hair found on Bridget's sweatshirt, right. And they connected that to Kyle. Using hair microscopy, they say that it's more likely than not Kyle's. So okay. It's not 100% match. It's not saying this is Kyle's. It's just more likely than not.
Okay, yeah, that's not
great. That's all evidence. The evidence they have against Kyle.
Okay.
So with Tim, the evidence is that he also had a hair that was more likely than not found on her pants.
Okay.
And a pubic hair found on her sock matches a sample that Tim gave, which I'm guessing is the same more likely than not.
Okay.
And here's a big one, at least for me. Blood on his shoe matches her blood.
Okay. So match. Okay. So he has her blood on his shoe. Anywhere else?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
So these are the two people that police are looking at. And obviously they're interviewed. Now, Tim is under 18 and can't be interviewed without his parents. So at first, when he's approached, no formal statement can be taken. But police will take note of like the marks that he had on his face and on his hands.
Mm-hmm.
And by July 27th, the RCMP does get to sit down with Tim.
Okay.
His first story is that him and Bridget have consensual sex.
Okay.
And then he states that the same story that he told his friends about this attacker.
Mm-hmm.
And he does describe this man to police. And for some reason, police believe that this person is Kyle.
Okay. Because of the description or...
Well, Tim says that he didn't see Kyle at the festival at all.
Oh.
And they ask him to describe Kyle, which he does. Now, here's the strange part. He describes a different person as the attacker. So why police think that it's Kyle, I don't know. I mean, Tim knows Kyle. They go to school together.
Right.
So why wouldn't he just say, yeah, it was Kyle?
That's fair, I think, yeah.
Okay, so Tim's second story, his second statement, changes. And this time he says that Kyle murdered Bridget. He details the murders to police and it matches the evidence that they have. Tim says Kyle beat her and actually made him punch her in the face. And he did that because he was scared.
Okay.
He tells them that he helped Kyle move the body. And I'm guessing that he said that Kyle beat him up because I couldn't find that part of the story.
Okay.
Although I guess that would kind of make sense because...
Well,
he doesn't say there was two people.
Right.
And police really do sink into this. They are on board for Kyle committing this murder.
Okay.
Both teens end up getting charged with first-degree murder. Tim, being 17, gets transferred to adult court. At Kyle's preliminary hearing, and that's where they state what evidence they have, or lack of evidence, really, that happened on December 11th, 1990, and it results in a stay of proceedings, which basically means that they're going to kind of table it until more evidence is found.
Right. They don't have enough, I guess, to go through.
Right. And it basically just shows that the Crown is not confident
in what they have. Yeah,
exactly. But the RCMP, and I've been saying police, but it was covered by the RCMP.
Okay.
Anyways, the RCMP can't let this Kyle thing go. And they try to get evidence to support a case against him.
Okay.
Which is kind of backwards, because you should get evidence to support a case, not just a case against someone.
Right.
But anyways, so the RCMP interviews over 20 inmates while he was waiting for his preliminary hearing. He was in custody. Right.
Okay.
And they want to get someone to say that maybe if Kyle confessed.
Okay. And so they want an informant.
An informant, that like one of the jailhouse people. Mm-hmm. And not surprising... they find someone. Well, they find five someones.
Okay.
And four of these men make up such strange stories that they have to drop them because it's too much.
Okay.
But one man, and his name is Jeffrey Cohen, actually testifies against Kyle.
Okay.
Jeffrey says that after this day of proceedings, Kyle told him, "I killed her and I got away with it." Now, the defense comes back later and says that after this day of proceedings, Kyle never went back to prison. He was released from the courthouse that day. So there's absolutely no way that Kyle went back and told someone. Like, he went back to get his stuff. I don't know why he would go back to the prison.
Right.
But he didn't go back to the prison or the holding facility or whatever. Mm-hmm. But the Crown doubles down and says that it had to have happened at that holding facility the night before. Okay. It doesn't matter because Jeffrey would admit that he flat out lied.
Ouch. Okay.
Right. But the RCMP are starting to get desperate. Mm-hmm. They're trying to prove that Kyle killed Bridget. Mm-hmm. And they use one of the most probably controversial tactics, which is the Mr. Big operation.
Right.
Is to get an undercover cop to befriend them and then get them to confess.
Yeah.
Saying that, you know, if there is evidence, I can get rid of it. You can work for me, but I need you to be honest. And mm-hmm. I know about this case against you. Tell me what happened. And they kind of coerce
a story. Yeah.
And it works. Sometimes too well because people falsely confess. But anyways, on June 13th, 1991, two undercover agents start the Mr. Big Project. And in what I've heard many times before, it begins with their fake car breaking down near where their target person is.
Okay.
And Larry Tremblay was the lead agent and befriends Kyle. And when Mr. Tremblay gets comfortable to get Kyle talking, he says that no less than four times that the police got it wrong.
Wow.
And that he never killed Bridget. Mm-hmm. Now, Kyle is 21 years old at this point, and in Manitoba, everyone knows what happened in this small town. Now, work isn't coming easy for Kyle. So during this Mr. Big sting, Kyle is told that he'll get a high-paying job doing illegal things for his new potential boss. And his potential boss is Corporal Larry Forbes. Obviously, I know Kyle doesn't know that at the time. And I'm going to use last names so that I'm not saying Larry all the time. So Forbes tells Kyle that he didn't want to deal with anyone that had trouble with the police. And he goes on to say, and here's the quote, "Larry tells me that you whacked somebody. That's fine with me. That's fucking excellent. It's the kind of thing that I know that I'm dealing with somebody that's on my fucking, somebody that I can trust. That's the kind of person I'm looking for," end quote. So Kyle has many conversations with these undercover agents, and he eventually does confess to Bridget's murder. Kyle makes statements that would contradict himself concerning the murder.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I believe that he falsely confessed at this point.
Okay.
And he's just telling them what they want to hear.
Because he wants to work.
He wants that job because he can't get work.
Okay.
The police also recorded a call between Kyle and, remember, his friend John Beckett?
Yes.
Kyle tells them that his reputation from the murder charge got him a great job where he'd be making a lot of money. So because of this, Kyle gets rearrested on June 25th, 1991.
Right.
Yeah. So as a result, both Kyle and Tim are convicted on February 28th, 1992. Kyle and Tim both appeal their convictions, and the Manitoba Court of Appeals upholds Kyle's conviction.
Okay.
Which I don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
Because they overturn Tim's conviction and an appeal was granted for him. So Tim is going to get a new trial.
Okay.
But he commits suicide before that happens. Now, Kyle always maintained that he was innocent. And finally, in the spring of 2004, things begin to change for him. Because there's another case where they started retesting some old samples.
Right.
And that set that person free. And it was a hair sample.
Okay.
So Kyle's samples get retested. And as a result, it's discovered that that hair on her sweatshirt isn't his. And on November 4th, 2005, Kyle is granted bail after 14 years in prison.
Wow.
So he is officially cleared on October 23rd, 2009.
So did they test the samples that they had against?
This was Kyle's actual team doing it.
Okay. So because
Tim passed.
Because Tim had committed suicide.
I don't think they retested it because who's trying to clear his name? He already had it reversed. To get a new trial, so...
Right. So there was something there that people saw.
That Tim did it. I don't know if it was because they believe that's a false confession that he made. I mean, he was 17.
Right.
And I feel like the younger you are, the more vulnerable you are to a false confession. Although anyone can falsely confess. But
they didn't find any more DNA on him, like, because he was beaten up.
Right.
Right, or so he claims he was beaten up. But he had marks on him.
That was the only forensic evidence that I could find.
See, I find that weird. I find it weird that this girl ends up murdered. Mm-hmm. And he just has some blood on his shoe.
On his shoe.
But his face is all...
Right. Like, well, there was blood on his chin. You don't know if that was her blood. Because obviously he wiped it off before he talked to police. Nobody's sampling that.
Didn't you say that, like, there were scratches on him?
Yeah.
So would his DNA not be under her fingernails?
In 1990, could they do that?
Well, I don't know, but they didn't even talk about.
They didn't.
Did they sample, like, did she have DNA under her nails? Right, because it's not that something would be. That
I had. I don't know if that was a testable thing in 1990.
I don't know if it was a testable thing.
It feels like that was like the beginning of DNA. Like the 90s was the beginning of DNA testing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if 1990 was they were.
Yeah.
Doing it.
Yeah.
But I do feel like a lot of what happened got lost with Tim. I feel like maybe he knew more.
Yeah, maybe.
But the police focus so hard on Kyle that if there was an unknown assailant,
right,
he's gone. And unless someone comes forward, I don't know if there'll ever be movement on this case. Because it's not active.
Right.
The other side to this is that the family, Bridget's family, was put through hell for years. I mean, I read that Ron, Bridget's father, he doesn't understand why so many appeals were granted.
Right.
And I think that they really did believe that the right people were in prison. But I feel like against Kyle, it's a really thin case.
Yeah, I do too. And I mean, when it comes to Ted's case.
Tim's.
Sorry, Tim's case. I don't know. I mean... Just the little evidence that you gave doesn't seem like enough also
to me. I mean, if he was granted a new trial, then obviously not enough for them either. Right. So should we believe Tim's story that an unknown person beat him up and killed Bridget? That almost makes the most sense for me anyways, because that accounts for him being beaten up and the lack of evidence found on her body of him. Maybe there really was another person. Unfortunately, no one's serving time for this case. It's still unsolved. It's really, really sad, and even sadder that Bridget really gets lost. The police and media spend so much time on Kyle that the real killer is walking free. So that's it. That's the case of Bridget Grenier, a sad end to a tragic case.
Remember to subscribe and follow us on IG at sisters.coffee.and.crime and on Twitter at sisters_crime. If you could leave us a rating or review on Apple, that would be greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening.
And next week we are covering our first international case, and that's the case of Catherine Knight. So from Sandra
and Christina,
talk soon.